Thank you, Dr. Park, for the introduction. My name is Nick Menchek, and I'm going to go over some research that I've been doing at Clemson University over the past year. And it's a lot of people have been talking about environmental stresses. I'm going to talk a little bit about salinity stress and its impacts on warm season turf grass management. Salinity stress is a major problem in turf grass management. It reduces the plant's ability to take up water. And it's very much like a drought stress when you first see salinity stress happen. But if excessive salts continue to be taken up into the plant through the transpiration stream, you can see damage in the transpiring leaves, and it can lead to ion imbalances and nutrient deficiencies within that in that leaf tissue, which can also disrupt membrane integrity, protein and enzyme function also. And this all also can reduce photosynthesis by the stomates closing, and sodium and chloride ions can also affect the electron transport in photosynthesis. So there can be many different causes for salinity stress. I'm going to talk about the geography and affluent irrigation water. Here's a picture of the map of the world, and it shows in those shaded regions, it might be a little tough to see, the salt-affected soils across the globe. So it's a global problem, and according to the FAO, about 20% of irrigated land is salt-affected. So including these geographical implications that lead to the salt stress, use of effluent water and water use mandates have kind of forced people to start using wastewater or effluent water irrigation sources. Now, effluent water is not a new concept. It's been used in this state since the 1930s. Although it is good at a standpoint of water conservation, there are a lot of problems with using effluent or poor quality irrigation water, including pH, solids that are also in that water, and also inorganics such as sodium that are also in that water. Past literature that has looked at nitrogen forms and under salinity have looked at nitrate and ammonium nitrogen forms and ratios. And there's been studies looking at creeping bent grass, wheat, barley, tomato, and they all generally agree that a mixed end form is the most beneficial for plants, and increasing that ratio of ammonium reduces the deleterious effects of salinity stress. And Bowman in 2006 did a study in tall fescue that looked at replete and deficient nitrogen in under salinity stress, and determined that the deficient nitrogen plants took up nitrogen much more quickly than the replete nitrogen plants. But overall, the uptake of nitrogen was generally reduced under salinity stress. And last, looking at all these studies, there's a lot of discrepancies between soil and solution culture. A lot of these are done in solution culture, and there have been a lot of kind of contradictory results between using a soil versus a solution culture because of some of the solid phase, and you see in the soil culture that can kind of affect the amount or the availability of those nutrients within the soil. So kind of looking at, to recap, that salinity stress is such a widespread problem globally for turf grass and agriculture. We kind of took a different approach, and we wanted to look at urea nitrogen because it's made widespread use for warm season turf grass management. And also because of its high percentage of nitrogen, its completely soluble nature, its low burn potential, it's just a nitrogen source that's commonly used. So we want to look at that, and we also want to look at all these ultra-dwarf Bermuda grass cultivars. They're becoming more popular in the transition zone and further south, especially when we had a summer like we had this past year with a lot of people losing bent grass. And we also want to look at seashore pos palm and zoysia grass as putting green quality or putting green grasses that we wanted to look at. And lastly, we want to look at the foliar versus root-absorbed urea nitrogen to see if there was a benefit between using one or the other in this scenario. So the objective of this study were to, number one, determine the nutrient status within these five cultivars under salinity stress, and two, examine the best delivery method of urea and whether it would be a root application or a foliar application under salinity stress. To go into the materials and methods, we used three cultivars of ultra-dwarf Bermuda grass, sea-dwarf seashore pos palm, and diamond zoysia grass. And These were all harvested from research plots in Clemson, South Carolina. They're 20-centimeter plugs that were washed and transplanted into 20 by 45 centimeter lysimeters with 30 centimeters of 85-15 and 10 centimeters of gravel. So it gave us a really good analog or representation of what a USGA green root zone would have looked like. And they were established in the study took place in the Clemson Research greenhouse facility. Fertility treatments in the irrigation regimes began in July of 2009 and were terminated in October of 2009. Weekly foliar root applications of urea N totaled a little over a kilogram of total nitrogen, which was over this 12-week study. Now, there's a foliar application weekly at the given at 560 liters per hectare carrier volume. And that root application, the carrier volume is so high because we had to ensure that there was proper or uniform coverage across the experimental unit, which I'll get into. And we used a 60 mil syringe to actually inject that into the root zone to ensure that there wasn't any foliar uptake of the urea. And now at the bottom, we have the two different irrigation regimes, which was a zero decisiemens per meter, which it might be a little bit more than that, but fresh water. And then we had a salinity irrigation regime at 12.9 decisiemens per meter, which came out to be 8,000 ppm of a single salt. We used sodium chloride. So as you can see, that's how we did the root and foliar applications. It was a CO2 backpack sprayer. And then, like I said, it was a 60 mil syringe that we used to inject across the lysimeter to get it into the root zone. The experimental design and analysis, it was a factorial design with five turf grass species, two irrigation regimes, a fresh and saline irrigation, two fertility regimes, the root and foliar. It was a completely randomized block with four reps. All means were analyzed with SAS at a Fisher's LSD and an alpha of 0.05. And I'm going to show you the results that we looked at and the parameters we looked at for 2009. We just finished this study again in 2010, so that's not going to be presented today. We looked at turf quality, leaf tissue analysis. We looked at turf quality for across the whole study through the 12 weeks. Leaf tissue nutrient analysis at 6 and 12 weeks. And also with proline accumulation and leaf electrolyte leakage. So figure one is the turf quality of these five species under fresh irrigation water. And on the y-axis, we have turf quality from 0 to 9. We have a reference line at 6 showing minimally acceptable turf quality. And we kind of expected this would be the case, that all turf grasses were above that 6 acceptable quality, although there are significant differences in there between the different cultivars. You can see the Champion is at the bottom, right at 6, where the other ultra dwarfs are a little bit higher up, and you can see Seashore Pus Pollen kind of in the middle there. It's a little bit washed out on that graph, but at the end, we did a destructive harvest, and this is what they looked like. It's a kind of representation of what they looked like, with Mini Verde top left, Champion in the middle, Tiff Eagle in the top right, which are the ultra dwarf cultivars. And below that, we had Diamond and then Sea Dwarf. Okay, so figure two also is the turf quality of the five species under saline irrigation water. Now, you see a lot more of a diverse response here. Same setup with turf quality on the Y and the weeks of the study over on the X. And you can see that they all start out at about 7, but they generally start to reduce in turf quality. We looked at color, density, and all the usual things you would kind of look at for turf quality. The main and glaring difference in this is that Champion, which is the red line that you see at the bottom, really reduced its turf quality over the study, and it stayed as the poorest performing cultivar through all the ultra dwarfs and between in the two other halophytic grasses, being Sea Dwarf and Diamond. So I can also show you that. In this picture, it kind of shows you that's what Champion looked like at week 12 when we took the destructive harvest. And you can see Mini Verde and Tiff Eagle looking pretty similarly, and same with Diamond and Seashore. They were all significantly different, but very much above that 6 acceptable level. So I'm going to set this up. This is a table showing the leaf tissue concentrations of NPK and sodium. And I'm going to first look at the salinity and freshwater irrigation. These are the overall averages at the end of the study. And it didn't significantly affect or reduce the amount of nitrogen that got into that leaf tissue. However, it did affect significantly the levels of phosphorus and potassium, and obviously it affected the levels of sodium. Now, if we get on to the species, there's kind of a diverse response here. You can see at the species level, there were significant differences in nitrogen content within that plant, and also within potassium and phosphorus. And also, you can see on that right side there with the sodium concentrations or sodium accumulation within that plant at the end of the study, that there were diverse responses or diverse accumulations within those plants, with the diamond and sea dwarf both showing drastically lower levels of sodium in the plant, which I'll kind of elaborate a little bit on later when we look at some of those stress parameters that we looked at. Now lastly, to look at the foliar and root application of urea nitrogen, we didn't see, once again, we didn't see any difference between foliar or root nitrogen as far as our fertilization, as far as the total nitrogen within that leaf tissue. It seemed that if it got into that plant, either through the roots or through the foliage, it was still about the same. Now, also, we looked here in the foliar versus root applications of urea nitrogen, and we found that the potassium and phosphorus levels were significantly higher. I know it's 0.01 for phosphorus and a little bit more for potassium, so it was significantly or statistically different, but we're not sure about the biological significance of that, or if there are any implications in that. This is this same type of chart. It's showing electrolyte leakage and proline accumulation within the irrigation regimes, species, and application delivery. And as you can imagine, the salinity irrigation really increased that electrolyte leakage and proline accumulation across all species throughout the study. If you go down to the species, we can look at there's definitely a diverse response between the three ultra dwarfs and the two more salt-tolerant grasses, being sea dwarf and diamond, and showing that champion was consistently the highest proline accumulator and also had the highest electrolyte leakage. And it kind of showed in that picture that it was the most stressed plant that we saw throughout this study. And then we also see diamond and sea dwarf kind of performing the best under the saline irrigation, which is what we would expect. And like I said, we saw that graph or the chart that showed the leaf tissue concentrations of proline and sodium. And we see on this graph, it kind of really shows that plants can either do two things. They can synthesize compatible solutes, or they can exclude that salt. And we see in the bottom left-hand corner, we see the two halophytic grasses. And it shows that they didn't include that salt. They either exuded it or they excluded it at the root zone. Whereas the ultra dwarf cultivars included or took up that salt, but then they started to synthesize proline and to try to alleviate some of that stress. So you can see that although Miniverde and Tiff Eagle did a better job of that with their just general performances over the study, that Champion, although it included all that salt and it synthesized all that proline, it didn't perform very well at all. So it kind of gives it's a really good correlation or relationship between the different strategies these plants employ. So the conclusion is that under saline irrigation regime examined, the nitrogen content in leaf tissue was not affected. However, P and K and micronutrients were significantly affected or reduced. Secondly, foliar applications of urea nitrogen resulted in higher levels of P and K in the leaf tissue than the root urea applications. And I talked about they were statistically significant, but maybe the biological significance needs to be looked at further. Miniverde and Tiff Eagle performed similarly under salinity, while Champion performed poorly. Over the whole study, it was the poorest performing cultivar. Now, we also have another year's data to look at to see if that is the general trend again. Sea dwarf and diamond exhibited the least amount of stress as indicated by electrolyte leakage and proline accumulation, which also was something that we would expect because of their salt tolerance. Now lastly, proline accumulation and sodium content within the leaf tissue exhibited a linear correlation, and I showed you that between the halophytic grasses and then the three ultra dwarfs, which are salinity tolerant to a point, but definitely performed differently. So future research projects we're going to look at is examine the urease activity in saline soils. Urease is a nickel-dependent metalloenzyme that breaks down urea into ammonium and CO2. And we wanted to see how that saline soils, how that is affected in saline soils, and then determine how foliar urea applications can affect urease levels within turf grass. And lastly, being a nickel-dependent enzyme, looking at supplemental nickel applications to see if there's any effect on total urease levels within that plant and how they are affected. I'd like to thank the Cliffs communities for their funding and support, laboratory assistance for Dr. Lee, graduate help Gib Bethay, and some undergraduate help Wesley Conrad and Nate Gambrell. And with that, thank you.